The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Well, we had a couple of technical difficulties. Those have been solved, so let's get into it. Let's not make apologies. The idea to survive is called change without punishment. Adapt, evolve. So that's what we're going to do. I'm going to move pretty quickly toward our first guest, toward our only guest tonight, Don Ford, known as Unrepentant Cowboy. I'm going to talk about him in a minute. I just wanted to make a couple comments real quick before we go in. I'm going to skip the news and the updates I have. I think the guest is more important. I'm noticing a big change. Last night I'm flipping through the channels and I get to Planet Green and there's this movie on called Collapse and there's this guy in there and it was, of course, me. But it was a very strange experience watching this on Planet Green with commercials in between. I was sponsored by, among other things, Trojan Personal Vibrators, which is like, that's the world we live in. That's the paradigm. It's cool. And a lot of good stuff on Planet Green channel, which I really liked and was very impressed with. But at any rate, we've had a ton of responses since then, and it's becoming real clear to me, and I think maybe to some of us out here, that this shift in consciousness that we talk about, this evolve or perish moment at the collapse and the beginning of the end of human industrial civilization, this shift of consciousness has actually taken place in a lot of ways and a lot of places. And I've been privileged to meet, and that's one of the things I'm doing here on the radio show and with CollapseNet. We just passed 2,000 members now in 51 countries, and we're that's starting to increase, too, because we offer a lot of good stuff there that really seems to be in demand. On CollapseNet, we have a huge, not a huge yet, but it's a large free directory called the Lighthouse Directory about many things, but that will help people survive, from soil restoration to gardening to permaculture to water purification to even slaughtering chickens and growing organic corn, which is what we're going to talk about tonight. And that's absolutely free. And the numbers of submissions are growing, and I know that there's five tens of thousands of listings out there that we need to find and get in there because people are really starting to look for them. I've been approached by big people in mainstream television. Just finished shooting, and I can say this on the air, a large two-hour special for the History Channel. It's going to air next February, next January, called The Futurist. That's all I can say about it. But I can tell you, I don't think it's going to be vanilla. So there's queries coming out, even from networks, people asking questions. And so that means there is a change going on, and that's what this is all about. And my guest tonight, Don Ford, goes by Unrepentant Cowboy. And one of the things I like about him, Don writes a blog for us on CollapseNet. It's a regional blog. Don lives in South Texas and Southeast Texas. And he writes on a number of other blogs. And he's well-respected for his clarity, for the fact that he's living the life, he's walking the walk and doing what he does. But I'm going to read you a quote from him. That'll just make you hold on until we come back. And then in keeping with that, our first new white trash song tonight is going to be a country song. We're going to do two country songs tonight. Because that's what we do. We mix the pain with the art, with the music, with the joy, with the laughter, with the stress, and with the survival. And that's how we do it. But Don Ford, let me just read this quote from Don Ford. Those that focus on the law of entropy without also studying the mechanisms of rebirth and reconfiguration on this planet miss valuable clues to our future. Plants take water in the presence of sunlight and chlorophyll and create glucose, which forms the basis for simple sugars, complex carbohydrates, and fats. Throw in nitrogen, which certain plants can also extract from the air and store in their roots, and you have the basis for all proteins. Herbivores consume grasses and redeposit nutrients into the soil. Put these equations to work in a sensible and well-thought-out arrangements, and you will eat. We can't save everybody, but we can save ourselves if we choose to do so. Our biggest enemy will prove to be those that choose only to take from others and offer nothing in return. I look forward to a time when local communities rise from the ashes and come together to find new and better ways to get along with this planet. I may not see that day, but I feel confident that someone will. That's a guy I want to talk to. I think it's a guy you want to listen to. So that that leads me up to the first new white trash song of the night, which is one that I wrote with an old dear friend and bandmate, Jim Sullins, of Nashville, Tennessee. Jim had been in a band I had many, many years ago, and when it came to the band New White Trash, I'm the guy that brought in really the country influence. I wouldn't call myself a full country singer because I like to sing across many genres, but I brought that influence in, and the idea was writing a love song to someone who was leaving your life because of the collapses of theirs. Someone who's lost a house, job, family, given up hope, but someone who you really love who's being forced to move away. Because it's really important for those of us as we go through this, especially if we're lucky enough to have somebody to go through with it with, to take care of them. Because at the end of the day, what it's all about is what's really important to you. So here's a song from New White Trash, Jim Sullins on the piano, me on the vocals. It's called On My Back Road.
Sometimes love leaves a glance, passing by my fence, and I just look down at my hard-headed ground, and I hate to see you go, baby, hate to see you go, yet you just slowed down. Turned and looked around. Sometimes love looks back to see its track, and I hate to see you go, baby. Hate to see you go. And when the time comes to mend your heart, I'll be there and I'll do my part. And you'll see that you ain't lost nothing at all. There ain't nothing like you on my back road. On my back road. Sometimes love takes a chance. A different dance. Does the fire still burn? Baby, make that turn and never look away, baby. Never look away. Winter with me. Leave your winter. Until the night heals, unto the day, until the hurt begins to go away, till my loving brings your living back around. 'Cause there ain't nothing like you on my back road. On my back road.
Trash. You can find the band and its new CD, Double Wide, 37 songs, at newwhitetrash.com. That's newwhitetrash.com. You can buy the album there. We'll talk more about it later. Okay, that put me in kind of the right place. And it's amazing how things can change our energies, and that's what we need to learn how to do as the stress of what's happening unfolds around us. We need to learn how to not be victims of our reactive states. When I talk to this guy on the phone and when I read his writing, I always get the same feel. I always get a feel like everything is calm and under control, and I'm sure he's probably laughing right now. But Don, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing okay. That calm is kind of an illusion in a way, though, because most of the time I'm kind of nervous under these circumstances, but I'll do my best.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what we're all doing here, and that's what we got to give each other a pat on the butt for. So what do you do for a living now? How do you exist in the world?
I would call myself a farmer and a rancher, but I actually am interested in a lot of things. I'm not really a specialist on any one subject. I like a lot of diversity in my life, so trying to get away. Yes, sir. On the farm and in my life as well, I don't like the idea of just monoculture or one crop or one aspect of farming. So everything.
You wrote a piece that we had up at From the Wilderness recently on your blog there about how you were about your experience with growing and harvesting organic corn this year. Why don't you take just a minute and tell us what kind of problems you encountered with the great big world of agribiz out there?
Well, sir, everybody around here grows genetically modified corn. It's Roundup ready, and some of them have moved also to the BT technology corn. And that simplifies the process because you can just plant this seed out there and you go over it with a machine and spray an herbicide, glyphosate, or Roundup on there, and it kills all the weeds and leaves the corn. But I began to worry about potential health issues involved with that, so I decided this year that I was going to go back and grow a non-hybrid heirloom variety of corn. And I planted a variety of corn known as Trucker's Favorite, and it's mainly it's not really a good corn for sweet corn, but it's a good field corn. It's been around for years and years, and we planted it, and then we had to cultivate it, of course, to deal with weeds, and we had an unusual amount of rain this year. I cultivated three times, and every time we'd run the machine through the field, it would rain, and some of the weeds would replant themselves or survive, and eventually we had to go out there with hose and hand hoe the thing. And after we'd made our final pass, we had a flood, about a 10-inch rain, and our fields are along the banks of the San Marcos and the Guadalupe Rivers, and it just planted a bunch of weed seed out in there. So by the time
did you have trouble with harvesting too? I think
yes, sir. By the time it got ready to harvest, we had a healthy crop of weeds in my corn, and I had to rely on a custom combiner, so I was last in line to get my crop harvested, and the weeds were pretty bad by the time he got here. And had he not been a friend, he wouldn't have done it at all. But we literally had to go out with machetes ahead of him and hack down weeds so he could get through the field having done all this stuff.
Let me just jump in now and tell the listeners that if you'd like to call in and ask Don a question, we're going to talk about slaughtering animals. We're going to talk about the good, bad, and the ugly, about really living on the land and adjusting to that. But if you'd like to call and ask Unrepentant Cowboy a question, the number is 1-888-874-4888. So, Don, what was your yield like as compared to those around you who were using all the agribiz stuff?
Well, in the worst of the fields, I only made about 60 bushels, but we didn't actually harvest all of it. And then in the best of our fields, we made about 90 bushels, which is, you know, by old-time standards, was a good crop. But this is not necessarily known as good country down here, but there were a lot of people that made between 125 and 140 bushels with the new varieties, genetically modified varieties.
Yeah, and you wrote about how hard the work was physically, and that's part of it, because even though the work seems hard physically, in your life, as you write, I get a feeling of, what would I call it, centeredness, you're dealing with it. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yes, sir. There was actually a part of the field where I wanted to keep seed back so we could hand select ears and get the best ears. Part of the problem that I had with the seed I got was combine, straight run combine seed, and it had small seeds and not selected seeds that caused inferior plants to appear in the field. So we actually hand harvested about 3 acres of this corn, and it's hard work, and it costs more to pay the labor than the value of the corn that you get back. However, there's something like Steinbeck wrote about, when you get out and you feel the soil and you see the details, you see things that you miss from a tractor, and you kind of get a deeper appreciation for this planet and the food that you're eating, and it just seems worth more, you know. There's a personal attachment to it.
You know, in about 3 minutes, we're going to take a station break. But, you know, as you talk about that attachment, that connection and reconnection to the land, I think, you know, I'll say it clearly that those who've been following me for a while understand that that's what I'm talking about this evolution that the human race needs to go through now. Maybe it's not so much an evolution as it is a remembering, just a recollection of who we are and where we came from, having some kind of connection to this planet that we live on, that is alive, that feeds us, that gives us our food, that gives us a climate that we can live in, that gives us water, that gives us everything. And it's become real clear that environmentalism is no longer what the cowboys would call, you know, so not you, cowboy, the infinite growth folks would call that lefty feel-good environmental stuff, which is just a marketing issue in this old paradigm. And now it's becoming clear that taking care of the environment is saving our lives, and not taking care of the environment and this planet is committing suicide. Don, you're well aware of collapse, and you understand what's going on about peak oil and everything else. What kind of feelings does the collapse of industrial civilization bring up in you?
I kind of have mixed feelings about it. When I look at go into the city and I see these people, and I'm involved in industrial agriculture as well, and I'm aware of these seeds of food that are being shipped in. I know how vulnerable they are, and it's frightening to me. You can't look at a child and realize that child may someday starve, maybe not so far into our future, and not feel for them. But on the other hand, you know, it's something that's just beyond my control. And so I'm just I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. I'm trying to find knowledge that's been around for thousands of years and was employed to get us here until this illusion that the 100 years of stored energy from fossil fuels brought on, you know. And it's available for anybody, and it's not very far back in anybody's pedigree to find it. But it really troubles me that we're so reliant on something that's so fragile and could be destroyed with any number of things. You know, it could be an outbreak of war, it could be a natural disaster, or anything that disrupts this fuel supply that we have coming in. 60% of which is imported in here in the United States. And we're going to be in trouble, and we're going to be in trouble quick.
Yeah, so that's pretty much clear, and it's upon us. And we're going to take a little short 2-minute break here with one of the songs from New White Trash that may actually be my favorite. I'm not on it, but it's just a killer dance track, and it's got this incredible line. It says, "Don't let the fear turn my ears and eyes off. It would be strange." We'll be back in a minute.
Fighting the long odds. You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
This is Peter Roth, the host of Energy Stew, which airs on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. My show interviews fascinating authors, inventors, and researchers of new understandings, techniques, and discoveries that can enhance and transform our lives. What is our potential and how can we fulfill it to the max? To find out, tune in to Energy Stew and Peter Roth at 8 p.m. Thursdays on Progressive Radio Network.
Freedom News Hour will bring you up to date on the latest news on the financial meltdown.
Begin restoring local communities. It can happen.
We'll be exploring the issues from a freedom-oriented, small government perspective.
I'm Walt Thiessen.
I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster.
I am Jake Towne.
Join us live Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Our guest tonight on the Lifeboat Hour is Don Ford, a.k.a. in the internet world, in the world of ones and zeros floating somewhere out there, the unrepentant cowboy. He's a blogger for us at CollapseNet, where you can find us at CollapseNet.com, along with a growing and expanding free directory of all kinds of things useful for people getting ready to face this thing, and a lot of other things, including commentary from me. If you buy a membership, which you don't have to for all services, for $100, it's 27 cents a day, and I think it's a darn good investment, CollapseNet.com. You'll find Don's writings there. So, Don, also, you raise livestock, too, don't you?
Yes, sir, we do. We raise them both for commercial aspects, and then we also raise livestock for our own personal use, and I'm trying to get back to more diverse ways of doing it. You know, we raise large amounts of cattle that go into the traditional system to feed the public, but I'm also trying to come up with more sustainable ways of doing that. I have milk cows and goats and yard chickens and all sorts of creatures around here. I have dogs and cats, no works.
All right, let me pretend I'm a city slicker. You know I'm a horseman just like you are, and I love horses,
yes,
and I've been around the barns a lot. If you want to ask Don a question about any of what we talk about, number is 1-888-874-4888. So, Don, I'm a city slicker, and I decide I'm going to survive collapse, and I'm going to get some backyard chickens, and then I discover that before I can eat it, I got to do several things to it. Basically, I got to kill it, and I got to dress it out. Those are the words, so you shouldn't be afraid,
yes,
of,
sir,
using them. That's what it is. So, Don, how do you kill a chicken and dress it out?
Well, the most important thing, in my estimation, is to properly bleed the animal. We have little cone-like devices that would be kind of like those pylon orange things you see on the side of the road, but you turn upside down, and you take that chicken, and if you have something like that, stick him in there upside down and let his head come down below, and cut those arteries underneath his throat.
Mm-hmm. And
you know, it's somewhat a cruel thing, but it doesn't seem so terribly bad for some reason. I don't know why. It doesn't seem like there's just a whole lot of pain involved.
Do you kind of say hello to the chicken or kind of acknowledge it in any way?
Well, I try to be respectful and realize that, you know, there's something about the Native American way of thinking that, you know, there's kind of this animal's a gift to you and he's given his life for our existence, and I don't like the idea of killing indiscriminately or without meat or anything, but I try to do things as humanely as possible.
Okay, so once you've cut the veins, the arteries in the chicken's neck,
right,
how long does it take for the chicken to expire?
Very short amount of time. They seem to lose consciousness within, let's say, 10 seconds,
mm-hmm,
or so, and
okay,
within a minute they're gone for sure. And then the traditional way is to have some hot water there, and you dip the chicken in a little bit of hot soapy water and then pluck the feathers off and all that. But I generally bypass that when we eat them. I skin the chickens. I don't mess with all that. It takes too long. So the first thing I would do would be to open their body cavity and remove the guts, and then I peel the feathers and hide it off mm-hmm. and throw it away myself. And of course, you know, if you like the taste of the skin, which I do, and you want to go through the extra work involved, you can dip those chickens into not boiling water, but I believe maybe about 140 degrees or something like that for about a minute, and then chuck the feathers off, and you would do that before you gut the animal.
Okay.
And then gut the animal. Then, of course, cut off the feet and head, and it's ready to go.
There you go.
Wash it out, good.
That doesn't sound too bad from the listening-only standpoint, but that's the process, and that's something that maybe psychologically, if we're thinking about things like that, we should probably get used to, because it's what we used to do anyway. Now, you have cattle,
well,
too, don't you, Don?
Yes, sir, that's right. We do. We raise mostly in this country. We have a lot of bottom country that's flooded. It floods periodically, and it's pasture land, a lot of brush country that's not really suitable for cultivation in this area. And cattle are effective at going and harvesting grasses and weeds and material that we can't digest, mm-hmm. and they convert that into meat and fat and hide and useful things for us. And a lot of people talk about how inefficient they are, but what they don't realize is it's kind of a zero-sum game. Maybe a pound of protein they consume only gives you 1/9 of a pound of protein back, but the rest of it is going back to the ground. So
in manure, right?
Yes, sir, it is. And if you're on a range-type situation, they actually recycle nutrients back in the soil.
So would I be correct if I said, Don, that there are cases where cattle, sheep, goats, pigs, animals that are consumed, eat things that are not otherwise edible and transform them into things that are edible, in other words, the meat for us, and return through manure, and hopefully you composted the chicken pieces you didn't use, that they return all that stuff back to the soil. So there is something natural and maybe an acknowledgement of the fact, I'm not arguing for it one way or the other, that human beings are omnivores, but, you know, we have carnivorous background.
Yes, sir, and if you look at, the Native Americans, they traveled around behind a buffalo, and that was an entirely sustainable system. They didn't kill animals unnecessarily. They utilized everything that they got. And the way we do it now, where you take animals and you move them thousands of miles from where they're born to a feedlot in the middle of the plain somewhere, and then you ship rails of corn to them, is ridiculous, because then you create a waste product. The manure is so bulky that you cannot get it back to the ground, and it's taken out of the loop. So eventually you start starving your soil, and you end up with these huge piles of the product. It becomes a waste product or hazardous product at the feedlot. But if you have a small, sustainable operation and you use grass-fed beef and don't feed grain to meat animals, except for when absolutely necessary, maybe, it's actually a fairly sustainable thing, and it does utilize ground that's not suitable for cultivation. One of the things that caused the Dust Bowl in the 30s was when they were plowing a bunch of pasture land up to plant wheat on it. And that one, in the combination of that and drought, caused a horrible ecological disaster. I mean, the worst thing that's happened in a century. So not every piece of ground is suitable for cultivation. And that's where animals play a part, herbivores.
Now, I'm sure that I got a lot of vegetarians and vegans out there jumping up and down and screaming. I just want to be clear that I am not arguing that people should be either carnivore or herbivore or omnivore or anything like that. What I'm doing is acknowledging the fact that, and respecting the fact that some people are vegetarians, some people are vegans, and some people eat meat. But
yeah, I would join you in that. I'm not trying to force my model on anybody, and I think in a perfect world we would eat vegetables. This world I live in is a long ways from being perfect.
Yeah, it is. But I'm just thinking in terms of overall balance to save the maximum number of lives on the planet, and also living in full recognition that the human race is not going to suddenly voluntarily choose to be vegetarian. That's the reality. And the thing is, what I'm getting as I move deeper into my own process of lifeboat building and my own process of evolution, is that everything centers around a fundamental respect for the way life works on this planet. And if you come from that point, then either vegetarian or omnivorian standpoint is acceptable. I think it depends on where you come from, your heart.
Yes, sir. Huh? In my case, I'm a celiac. I can't eat wheat. You know, it poisons me. Not everybody's going to be the same, and I kind of have a libertarian bent to my outlook on life. I don't want to force my way of living on anybody, and I don't want them forcing theirs on me either.
I think that's a good way to look at it. So let's go back to these cows, because I just finished having some dinner with my partner Susie and with some Luis Mora, who's our operations manager at Collapsed, and his wonderful wife Celia. And, you know, we had beef short ribs, and it was good. So let's say you own cows, and let's say that it comes time to turn one of those things that are walking around mooing into something you can eat. How do you slaughter a cow, and how do you dress it out?
Well, that's a much more difficult prospect on a small scale. To be honest, if you're talking about individual families, smaller animals like sheep and goats are a whole lot easier to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Cattle tend to be very large animals, and assuming you have freezers, you know, then that's the workable equation. Or if you have a large group of people to feed, where you can, because let's say a 1,000-pound cow is going to have 600 pounds of carcass, and maybe let's say 400 or 500 pounds of bone meat. So that's a lot of meat.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're to do this without a tractor around or something, you better make sure that you kill this animal where you intend to slaughter it to begin with, because you are not going to move this thing.
Elementary physics.
Yes, sir. And if you have a tractor now with a front end loader, and you can go over there, you know, and pick this thing up to skin it and get the guts out, well, then that's not such an important deal. But I would recommend in a country environment a shot to the head. Right, if you draw an X between the ears and the eyes, right in the middle of the forehead with a small caliber weapon like a .22 rifle, and then you would and that'll immediately knock the animal out, and but it probably won't stop the heart, and then you would cut the artery there at the kind of the base of the shoulder. There's a groove right in their neck there where you can stick a knife in there and allow the heart to evacuate the blood. You want to be draining blood from the carcass.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's very difficult. If you don't have a tractor and you can't lift the animal, you're going to have to roll the animal on its back, and it would be a good idea probably to kill it on a tarp or something of that nature, a canvas or a really clean grassy place where you don't have dirt and debris. And you'll have to roll the animal onto its back, and you make an incision kind of around the anus so you don't cut the digestive tract.
Mm-hmm.
When you pull the guts out, you want to keep those intact, and then you would make an incision up the middle of their belly. And then you have to go in through the throat and sever their the upper end of their digestive tract as well, and It's a very difficult process. The weight of the matter in their stomach is extremely heavy. A lot of people don't realize it, but you're pulling about 200 pounds of stuff out of there, 200-300 pounds of stuff out of there, and it's a messy and a bloody job, you know. It's much easier if you have a way to suspend this animal, and if you can suspend them like with a tractor, or if you have a chain hoist or something of that nature where you can string them up from a beam. There are several ways you can do it, but usually what they do is they'll cut a notch in between, right above the hock. Between the bone and the tendon, there's kind of a space where you can cut a slice, and you would stick some sort of a pipe or a piece of wood, and then use that to lift the animal. And when you do that, then the way gravity goes work in your favor, and when you cut the cavity open, the body cavity open, well, the weight of the guts will just kind of cause them to dump out. You know?
We're going to need to take a quick break for a song here so we can stay on track. We're with Don Ford, the Unrepentant Cowboy, one of the extremely popular internet blogger who blogs for us at CollapseNet.com and many other sites like Matt Savinar's Life After the Oil Crash, my good friend Matt Savinar. You can find him in a lot of places. A lot of people like reading what he has to write. And we're talking about a lot of different things tonight. But it's time to go to our next New White Trash song. And this is another Western song. And it's called This Day Is Done. And Doug Lewis and I knocked this song out in a day. I'll never forget it. The bass track on this is played by my dear friend, Miss Lisa Mann of Oregon, who's the best voted the best female vocalist and the best female blues bass player in the state of Oregon. Here's This Day Is Done. When you get home, you're tired, and you still got time to hug your honey. Where you can find all of our music written. We call it post-paradigm music, written by by a band and a couple of dogs that and with some great input from some amazing women, by the way. Kristen Weigart, amazing vocals. Kara Tompkins, vocals, does amazing work, but she's also, Kara is also our resident muse. People who are writing about how we get through this this god-awful time that we're living in now. You can find us there at newwhitetrash.com, and that's the music you'll be hearing here on the Lifeboat Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm going to start to take some calls here, 1-888-874-4888 for Don Ford. And Don, until I get a screen up here showing me what callers are on. You carry a lot of wisdom, and as I listen to you talk about the process of dressing cattle, I could feel the if you will, what would you call it, the reverence, the heaviness there. I've seen violence more than I care to talk about ever, and it's not a pleasant thing, but it's something we accept. And now, are there ways in which going through experiences like that make the rest of your life richer? Don, you there?
I missed part of what you asked. Am I not coming?
Okay. That's all right. That's, hey, man, it's live radio. What can I tell you? It's great stuff.
Yeah.
What I had asked was when you go through stuff, and I appreciated the reverence and the discomfort that you shared with us about taking that life so that we could eat. And what my question is does going through the fullness of that life, death, living process make any, does it make any part of your life richer?
I believe so. It also forces you to deal with your own mortality. You know, you're really close on a farm to this constant overturn of life and death. Animals are born and they die. And we tend to outlive lots of generations of horses and cattle. None of the horses that were alive when I were a kid are with us anymore. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of gives you an idea of our temporary nature as well, you know. And I think it kind of, in a way, you see the continuity of life. You see these animals almost recreated, and you know that the human race, you know, going to do the same, even though we're going to go to some unknown fate ourselves. The life goes on, and I don't know. I think it makes the idea of our own mortality easier to deal with.
You live in South Texas, fairly close to Austin, right?
About an hour south of Austin, yes, sir.
Okay.
By car.
Do any of your neighbors around there get it? Do you see any sense of awakening down there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. A number of them. More than you'd suspect. I have a few friends that come by and talk about this stuff routinely, and I try to educate people when I come in contact with them, and I try to learn from them. There's a lot of old timers here that have seen and done things that have been lost in my generation, and I try to learn from them. And I'm also exposed to people from the Mexican culture who came from a lot more primitive environment. And I've learned things that most people of my race don't. We kind of look down on guys that worked with a burro or that used an ox or knows how to hand harvest corn and store it in the field so the bugs won't get it, or hand thrash pinto beans. We're doing a lot of things. I've learned an awful lot from people that we probably, in our arrogance or whatever, with all these machines and modern ways, dismiss. So there's a lot of people that are being awakened, I believe.
I personally, as you know, someone who's been out here for about a decade, I should tell the audience that Don and I have historically crossed paths in many ways before, and we found that out, and it's kind of grounds for a good friendship. But my experience truly is, as I'm getting deeper into this, especially with CollapseNet and the great input that we're getting there from our members and the way we're growing and the services that are being actually devised on the fly as we go, because CollapseNet is really set up to be a place where people who are actually in the process can come to with the problems that they're having, and we can adjust ourselves to meet those. But I'm just getting... There are times when I giggle, and, you know, I find myself questioning myself lately, you know, why are you giggling when everything is going so bad? And the reason why I'm laughing and smiling is because I am seeing people wake up. Don, I would imagine you're a man of some respect, and there are probably a lot of people listening tonight who are in their 20s and 30s. Aside from I'm sorry, which is what I put in when I autograph books to people of that generation a lot. What else would you like for them to take out of this? As an elder, what could you offer?
Well, I think that there are people that will have knowledge and advice. Unfortunately, not that many in my generation, but there are some. And the youth, they're strong. You know, they have manpower, and if they'll accept a little bit of direction, there will be people willing to help them, and it'll be a mutually beneficial relationship. Because if I'm denied, say, for instance, the ability to farm all this land that I have under my watch here, it's going to take literally hundreds of people to successfully harvest, plant, harvest, cultivate crops, and deal with the cattle and everything else that I have to do. I don't know exactly how that arrangement will work out, whether we'll see sharecropping arrangements come along if and when that day comes, or if you'll see cooperatives formed, or, you know, I think you're going to see a lot of land get abandoned by these people who are totally tied to the modern way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they have a chance now while things are still intact, and they have a lot of data that's available. Food libraries are better yet on the internet. You know, they're more proficient than I am. They have a chance to learn a lot of this stuff because it's documented. It's out there. If you go look for it, you can find it.
One of the things that I'm seeing a lot is that people in their 20s and 30s have greatly diminished skills at manual tasks, things that require eye hand coordination, use of tools, anything like that. They can work a keyboard fine. They can text fine. But, you know, I heard a story about, actually, I was up in a great place in Northern California in Round Valley, and they said that, you know, they'd seen an 11-year-old girl walk by a barn. She was on a field trip or something, and she looks at an axe and goes, "What's that?" That kind of scares me when I see things like that. And
it does me, too, but on the other hand, it's not very far back in their pedigree. They're young. Their bodies are resilient. They're not going to like it, but believe me, they can do it.
We've got about 30 seconds now before we end the show. I apologize for the tech difficulties up front, guys, but we got through that. Donna, it's a pleasure having you on. You blog regularly for us at CollapseNet, and you can be found in many places on the Internet. Don Ford, unrepentant cowboy who is living the life. He's walking the talk, and he has wisdom to share. And we hope to have a lot more people like that on this show. Don, you got any parting thoughts out there? What do you want to leave people with? I want to leave them in a good mood. How do we do that?
Well, I just say that we can, will survive, or a remnant will, and no matter how bad things seem, you know, I think life goes on. So keep your head up and work every day with your hands, and things will work out somehow or another.
I believe that, especially if we got people around like you, man, like us, like those of us who have been around a little bit, trying to share what we know and teach as much as we can. And what I'm grateful for is that so many people are asking for it. You can find us here on the Lifeboat Hour every week on the Progressive Radio Network. We'll see you next week.